I'm Chuck Osborne.
And I'm Michael Smith. Welcome to our podcast, which is presented by Assured Partners Investment Advisors,
where we talk investing and all things related in a way you can understand.
Woohoo!
Hi, this is Chuck.
This is Michael. It's Thursday, November 13th, 2025. It's the 24th episode of our podcast.
Woo-hoo!
Chuck, what is on your mind today?
Bubbles, Michael. Everyone keeps talking about bubbles. And the question is, are we in a AI bubble or not? Which actually, I don't think is really the right question. I think we are definitely in a bubble. The question should be, is the bubble about to burst?
Where are we in the bubble?
where are we in the bubble? So yeah, this brings back memories for me of the late 90s and the tech bubble of the internet combined with Y2K. We forget sometimes about Y2K also being
That's part of that.
That's
true.
But people remember now, looking back, they remember famous quotes like Alan Greenspan saying, this is irrational exuberance. But what they forget is that that quote was from 1996. And the bubble did not burst until, really the year 2000. Really, 2001 was kind of the worst year. And that was a long period of time. And so the question is not really, are we in a bubble? The question is, how long is this bubble going to last before it actually becomes dangerous and close to exploding?
And part of the reason why you have to ask this question is because if you listened to Alan Greenspan in 1996 and thought we were in a bubble, then, you missed out on one of the best bull runs in the stock market history, there are real ramifications of getting that wrong. There's a lot of philosophical ways to talk about that, but it's important to keep that in mind.
Well, you're absolutely right, Michael. And I remember vividly because, I was, in my career then. Now, I was still relatively, junior. So it wasn't necessarily my head on the chopping block. But I was part of a team that ran an asset allocation strategy. And the lead manager back, and this was about 97, he said that, tech has gotten too expensive. We're in a bubble. It's going to explode. And he saw huge opportunities in real estate. And he wanted to shift, our overweights. We did shift our overweights away from technology and towards real estate. Now, if we had been able to just then get into a time machine and leapfrog a decade, we would have looked like geniuses.
That would have been good.
But two and a half years later, he was fired, and then the people in that strategy end up getting whipsawed because then we, went into technology at the wrong time at that point. And as we often say here, you kind of infamously turn one mistake into two mistakes.
and that's the
real world. That's what happened.
No, in a world where you actually have clients that have short-term expectations, which is a lot of what we do, there's just truth to a lot of that. Being early is the same as being wrong. it can be painful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, the good news is, if you are, if you're managing your own money and you don't want to get involved with all this AI, speculation and what's going to happen in the future, then you don't have to. You can sit it out. Warren Buffett very famously set out the tech boom, and this is something that people don't talk about with Warren Buffett when they talk about him being such, the great investor that he is that the most brilliant move he ever made was buying Berkshire Hathaway and then firing all his clients. You know, he didn't care how much he underperformed in the 90s, you know, because it's not like anyone could get rid of him. And most professional money managers don't have that luxury. You know, their clients will eventually give out. And that's, you know, and that's why it's so important for us to kind of understand how markets work from a psychological standpoint and kind of where we are, and understand the fact that bubbles don't burst when everyone's talking about it being a bubble. You know, and this is something that, you know, having lived through the tech bubble and the, you know, the real estate bubble in the aughts that ended in the financial crisis, or what they're now calling the Great Recession, that in both of those instances, people were talking about bubbles 2, 3, 4 years before the bubble actually burst. But, you know, in 1999, all that talk had gone away. No one was talking about bubbles in 1999. Everyone was talking about it in 96, 97, you know, to some degree, you know, 98. And a lot of people thought the bubble was bursting in 98 when long-term capital imploded and the market did go down 20%. But the bubble kept inflating. And one thing that I think is important for people to understand, again, we look back in history and it seems like such a short period of time, but when you live through it, it seems like, you know, day by day, it seems like a very long period of time. And during the 90s, NASDAQ, which is where all those big technology companies were located, had a 12 market corrections, so drops of 10% or more. A handful of which were, you know, close to 20% or close to 20%. And every time it bounced back, and every time people kept saying, this is it, the bubble's bursting, and then it didn't burst. And then people started saying things like, oh, this is a new world. Valuations don't really matter. And that is when it actually got dangerous. And that's when you actually need to be careful.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of similarities, right? You know, there's similarities and difference between now and there. And, you know, valuations are one of the biggest things that people are talking about. But if you even look at valuations, I think you can see some differences. So, like, we're looking even at late 99. There's an argument you should look in mid-2000. But in late 99, you know, the forward PE of the S&P was 25.71. We're currently at 22.9. So we're well below the current moment where that was then. If you look at the NASDAQ was trading over 100 times forward PE. It's now trading at 34. That's a very different valuation world within tech itself. So yeah, of course, we are expensive, but even just from the valuation piece, it's very different. And the average net margin of an S&P company back then was 7. It's now almost 12. So you also have higher quality companies. You know, the Mag 7, the big tech companies these are like modern day utilities. We're talking about some of the strongest, most powerful businesses with the best balance sheets and largest amount of cash flow generation that have ever occurred in the history of the world. So, you know, there's similarities surface level at this point, but there's a lot of real differences when you really dig into to what's going on.
No, you're absolutely right, Michael. And I think you really hit on something. You know, first of all, to your point, we're nowhere near where we were back then in terms of valuations. And it's just not, when people say we are, that's just not right. I heard a gentleman I think a week or so ago, on CNBC, come out and say that, you know, well, back in the internet days, everyone could see exactly what, you know, the road to profitability that was there and how this was going to be, these were going to be hugely profitable businesses, et cetera, and so forth. And now with AI, you know, there's just, you don't have that clarity. And again, you know,
that's
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he did see that back then. But when I hear that, I don't remember anyone talking about that in the 90s, you know, and I think that is really like looking backwards in history and believing that you actually knew what was going to happen when the reality is you didn't. There was all kinds of speculation going on back then. There were all kinds of people, you know, that did not know the future. And it's always like that when you have a new technology. I mean, you have an enormous amount of speculation going on, and you're going to have a handful of these companies that probably do figure it out. And if anything's different now than then, it's the fact that these companies, for the most part, are real. You know, there was a lot of dot-com companies back then that were just business ideas that went public. And, you know, and there's some of that now. You see some smaller quantum computing companies that don't have revenues, that don't have an actual business. But the big names that everyone talks about, their revenues are growing dramatically. And they're, you know, for most of them are profitable already. There's some that aren't, but most of them are showing profits. And they're actually showing really solid business results. Far sooner than we did with the internet.
You had 10%. You had 10%. You know, of usage of the internet roughly at the time, right? You had dark fiber being laid everywhere that you hoped was going to be used. Say what you want about AI, but we're running out of capacity. I mean, every person has AI on their phone. Every enterprise is spending billions to put it out to their people. I mean, we may be building too fast, things may be ahead of themselves, but it's actually real. We know this is actually real, which is a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, it's real now, at least. Whereas, I mean, the internet was, obviously now we look back and we say that it was real, but it took a long time for it to be real.
Well, but Michael, even when you say that, again, people look back and they, you know, we overbuilt the capabilities for the internet, and we underestimated the technological advances that, you know, compressed data made it easier to get through, you know, and there's always talk about that. And that will happen with AI, but that's years down the road.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you can't say we can't be in a world where we, have capacity issues and say that we've already overbuilt, you know, when you've overbuilt, there are no more capacity issues. Those two things don't exist in the same universe. And, and again, we probably are going to get there because it's human nature. It's what, and it's what markets do. Markets tend to overreact, but people also forget that there's a lot of people worrying and talking about, you know, being in a bubble. That was happening all through the 90s until it wasn't. And when it wasn't was when the bubble started to burst. The other thing, and we preach this to our clients and listeners and viewers all the time, is that prudent investing and wise investing is done from the bottom up. So you got to pay attention to what's actually happening at the companies that you own and your own portfolio. And one of the things that happened in 2000 when the bubble finally burst, first of all, you had, you know, no one was talking about a bubble at that moment. They were talking about it being a new world, largely because people had been talking about a bubble for 4 and 5 years, and it kept not bursting. And then ultimately what happens is people start believing, well, maybe it's never going to burst. Maybe we are in a new world. And that is usually when the bubble actually bursts. But the other thing that happened was revenue and the businesses themselves, not the stocks, the businesses accelerated into 2000. And then in 2000, they stopped accelerating. And then eventually their earnings actually dropped off the cliff in 2001. And people also forget about that. The bursting of that bubble was not a giant sudden thing like the financial crisis or like bear markets that we've seen in last few years. It was a 3-year
slog.
or at least 2.5 years. I mean, it was just a continual dredge downward during a multiple year period of time. And, you know, and it was driven not just by the valuations, but by the fact that the businesses themselves started to see downturns.
Yeah. And which is really important to look in the current moment where, you know, roughly year to date, the S&P is up something like 15%. Last I checked, it's in that general range. And EPS growth is in the range of 13% or something like that. So, right. You know, that's not a crazy up year. This is not like a 98, 99 flying up 80%, you know, whatever it ended up being on some of those. We had these crazy years. It's a melt up, and it's a melt up that almost perfectly is matching earnings growth, which is not scream bubble.
No, not at all. And the other thing again, and you know, go back to your earlier point about the surface. On the surface, we're up, you know, maybe 15%, 16% right now. And that can easily be down, you know, another 2%
by the time this podcast. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Underneath the surface, things keep churning. And, you know, this is anecdotal, but I think it's just a great example of what's going on. You know, in our own core equity strategy, when we do our attributions, so every month we're looking back, every week we look back a month and want to know exactly what's happening, what's working, what's not working, et cetera. And, you know, the last time we looked at that, over the last month, the 5 best performing stocks that we own were all technology companies. The worst 5 stocks that we owned over that period were all technology companies.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it's not, there's been bifurcation in this market, not only from sector to sector, but within sectors, there are, you know, in any short window of time, there have been winners and losers. And that's not what you see in a bubble. What you see in a bubble is that everything that is tech related or AI related or whatever, you know, the bubble of the day is, it's all being lifted, whether it makes sense or not.
Yeah.
And it's all being lifted at the same time. And that is not occurring right now. That is
Within tech, you've had a significant rotation out of software, which you had a 20% draw. Now, some of that's been coming back, but you had a 20%, you know, in the last month, 20% drawdown in software. Yeah. You're currently having a drawdown in some of the, more hardware oriented and true, AI focused companies, not like the Mag7, not the Microsofts of the world, but you've got a 20 and 30% drawdown happening right now in many of those companies. I mean, underneath the surface, does not feel like an exuberant tech market in the moment.
No, it is not. There's really no exuberance anywhere in the market. If anything, we keep melting up, but we're still being very pessimistic about it, which is why we have all this talk about being in a bubble.
Well, and what a lot of people don't realize too, because we manage very conservative strategies too. I mean, the stocks in our most conservative strategy that's very income focused and dividend paying, some of the best happening out there. You've got those stocks are doing very, very well. And so, again, there's a real dichotomy underneath the surface compared to what people that are just looking at the surface down think is going on.
No, you're absolutely right. And The you know, one thing I will add, you know, anecdotally, you know, we do have to be careful when we look back at history, because as the famous line, which, you know, I think is always attributed to Mark Twain, and there may be some debate whether he ever said it or not, but the history doesn't actually repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. You know, this episode is not going to play out exactly the way the tech bubble played out in the 90s. But there are certain elements, and in my view, these the most important elements are kind of the human psychology that goes into the market of how bubbles work. And so, you know, I have a lot of anecdotal stories from that time. One of the stories I have happened in about, I think it was about 03 or 04. And it just stands out in my mind because we had kind of, we were just recovering from the dot-com bubble having burst. We were getting some positive momentum in the market that occurred kind of in the middle of the aughts. And I was at a dinner party and someone asked me at that point in time if I thought we were in a housing bubble. And, you know, and it's the same thing. That was in, like, I believe 04. You know, we were in a housing bubble. That bubble did not, implode or explode until 08. And, you know, the reason that couple was asking for that is because they were thinking of selling their house and buying a bigger one. They waited and they waited because they thought we were in a bubble. And then they finally did it in, if I recall correctly, in 07, right at the very worst time in the market. And when they sold that house, they ended up having to actually downsize because they had bought it right at just the worst moment you could have bought. Because they thought we were in a bubble 4 years ahead of time. And this is just, I think, human nature. I think we do see the bubbles forming. I think we do understand that there's a bubble happening, but we tend to understand it long before the bubble actually gets to a point where it's problematic. And so I think there's a way we go about this. And what we would recommend to most investors, if you're investing in your own, is that we want to know what we own. We want to do it from the bottom up, and we want to be diversified. We are going to have exposure to AI, but we're not going to just go all in and ignore everything else. And we're going to have diversification, and we're going to be protected. We also have our own internal processes for trimming down positions as they start to get too big, and not just letting them become, larger and larger and larger. And all those things help. There are two other methods you can use to go through the bubble. And one is the Warren Buffett method. And that is just don't invest in AI. But you have to have an enormous amount of discipline to do that. And the other one comes from a person who was a colleague of mine at the time, a gentleman named Trent May from Invesco. He ran the Invesco Blue Chip Growth Fund, which was a poster child for the internet bubble in both directions. He got great. He was lauded. The returns were fantastic, during the inflation of that bubble. And when that bubble burst, his fund burst more than most. And the reality is, and he ended up losing his job, you know, all kinds of turmoil happened to that division, that group that Invesco had out of Denver. You know, had he had the ability, like Warren Buffett did, to just withstand those arrows for another 5 years, you know, those companies that he owned in that portfolio then outperformed for almost 20 years. So, you know, if you have the discipline to do that, then you don't have to worry about whether this is a bubble or not.
Yeah.
For the vast majority of us who just don't, you know, don't have that makeup and that ability to be out of favor for that long period of time, then what, you know, what you have to do, I think, is kind of go with our process of paying attention from the bottom up and understanding that what will really tell you when we're in a bubble is when the stock prices keep going up, even though the company isn't growing like it once did. And that's when you have to realize that we're in a bubble and things could burst. And that will be the moment when everyone stops talking about us being in a bubble, because they've, you know, been wrong for so long. Their caution has been overwhelmed by their fear of missing out. And that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, that's probably a pretty decent place to wrap it up. What do you think?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. So, you know, like always, we appreciate all of our viewers and our listeners. Please do us a favor. If you like what we're putting out, please subscribe and share it and like it and do all those wonderful, you know, social media things. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and let us know. We're happy to talk about anything. You know, if you got some thoughts on topics, we'd love to hear that. So thanks. Yeah. See you in a month.
See ya.
Chuck Osborne and Michael Smith are investment advisors, representative of Assured Partners Investment Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor. All statements and opinions expressed in this program are based upon information considered reliable, although statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information expressed does not consider the specific situation or objectives of any person and is not intended as a recommendation appropriate for any person. Viewers are encouraged to seek advice from a tax or legal professional or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk, and unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed.